Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Hi, everyone. I think you're going to love this episode. We bring you a great session from Waste Expo, and it's Closing the Deal, a fireside chat with Worthing Jackman of Waste Connections and Ben Harvey, president of E.L. Harvey & Sons. It's a great episode. You're going to get a behind-the-scenes look of the deal that went down between Waste Connections and E.L. Harvey & Sons back in September 2021. And you hear both sides of the table, what it took to make the deal happen. And they're really candid and open about it. And it's great because E.L. Harvey & Sons has been a family-run business for four generations. So to hear their thought process, what looks like a good deal, what's worth waiting for, and what to keep in mind as you go down this road, it's solid advice, and I think you'll find it invaluable. So enjoy this and have a great day.
All right, let's get going. For our first question, for Ben, as a multi-generational family-run company, what were the factors behind your decision to sell late last year? I wouldn't have pegged you necessarily for somebody who was going to sell.
You know, since we've been, Leon was nice enough to put these questions out to us so we had time to think about it, and I think I've had too much time to think about it. And, you know, we really didn't wake up one morning and say, hey, let's do this deal. We had no intention. We're a multi-generational, 100-year company based in central Massachusetts. We've been doing it for a long time. We've grown a nice, very nice business. And we really, really had no idea. We just, you know, there just was an opportunity that presented itself to us and our family. And we decided that we would move forward with negotiating this deal. But it wasn't, we certainly didn't go out soliciting companies to come in and bid to purchase our company. It was just, it was an opportunity that we felt we needed to do. And it just kept moving along and moving along. But it was not something, again, that we said, I was thinking about this. There was a lot of reasons for selling a company, and we didn't have a triggering event, which could have been a death in the family. It could have been finances. It could have been lawsuits. Could have been a host of many, many different things that would put us into that triggering event. There was nothing at all like that. It was just a conversation that ended up in a proposal that ended up in negotiations, that ended up with the sale of our family company to Waste Connections.
Thank you, Ben. And for Worthing, how and where did the purchase of Harvey fit into your strategic plan? And what drew you to Harvey in particular?
Well, I'm sure we weren't the only company drawn to Harvey over the past 100-plus years. look, for us, when we go into a new market, we're looking for the gold-plated anchor tenant, so to speak, for which to grow the business beyond that. And obviously, you know, there's no finer name than E.L. Harvey in Massachusetts. And for us, it was, frankly, it was humbling and quite an honor when Ben said, we'll do a transaction with you. I mean, you think about who we are, what people mean to us, what culture means to us. I mean, there's no finer asset probably to your family than your family, and for you to entrust your family with us and on the go forward, because we had a vision together what we could do to grow Harvey. It's still called E.L. Harvey & Sons today. We've almost doubled the revenue in, 8 or 9 months since we've closed the transaction. Your son VJ is now a division vice president running $300 million or so for us in Massachusetts, Rhode Island. It just couldn't be any better how the transaction was done. Again, how humbling it is for us and what an honor it is to be chosen, but more importantly, what we've been able to do with the company under the name Neil Harvey since then.
And just a bit of follow-up on that for the both of you. Had you been talking for quite a long time, or was this something more opportunistic or more recent?
So I'll give you, we've been fortunate enough as a family and as a business to be very involved in our trade association. And by being that involved in NWRA, and before that EIA, and before that NSWMA, I mean, we've been playing in this arena for quite a while. We knew everybody. It wasn't a strange thing to do this. But it wasn't, I'm trying to think what your question was. One of the things that Worthing said is, yeah, we've been around for a while and there were a lot of suitors, but when we started this process, we didn't want it to be an auction. We wanted to deal with one family, if you will, a company. We've known Ron and Worthing and the guys at Waste Connection for years, and it was I will tell you that when I originally got the phone call that the team from Waste Connections would like to come up and visit with us, the family, the Harvey family, I said, don't waste your time. Don't get on a plane and fly to Massachusetts because we're not interested in doing anything. And when they came up and they visited us and they talked to us, and let me tell you, Ron Mittelstadt is a very charismatic person. And he presented a very, very good, not a proposal, but just talked very, very well to our family. And so then when they left, we went to dinner that night, and I said, well, I don't expect anything to come out of this, but I did. I said, thanks for coming up. We went out, had a great dinner in Worcester, Massachusetts. We went about our ways, and I said, well, you probably won't be hearing from us again. And that's about how it started. We're extremely pleased with what we feel we've done with Waste Connections. I might have got off the subject there a little bit, but...
No, you covered it well. And then turning to Worthing, just a little bit more overarching. From the point of view of the buyer, what are the overarching structural factors you believe are vital to consider in either the Harvey or any other potential transaction? In other words, what are the aspects of the business and the financials that you focus on most?
Look, there's a number of items. Obviously, financial performance, obviously name in the marketplace, and strategic positioning are all critical. As Ben knows, we keep the name Harvey in the marketplace because that's invaluable. I mean, Waste Connections isn't the name in the marketplace, and so obviously we're looking at not only financial, but structural on deals, the quality of the assets, right? Have they been investing in their business? And of course, in Massachusetts, diversion, post-collection, are critical, and the family's made all the right investments. In other words, this wasn't a business that was underinvested in, positioned to sell. You don't do this for over 100 years without having significant investment in the business. And so the quality of the assets obviously drive our expectations as well.
Great. And for Ben, in the course of the due diligence process on your end, what aspects or what requests did they want most from you, or what were they most focused on? And were there any surprises in what they asked you for?
What didn't they ask us for? What size, what color socks do you like to wear? No,
I've got your colonoscopy videos if you need them back.
I wasn't going to go there, but anyway. What was the question again? We are fortunate that we have a very good team that when we started to put the package together, we knew what to expect. I don't think there were any surprises from either side. As Worthing said, we've been pretty much up front. We host and invite a lot of people into our facility to take tours. There was nothing hidden under the carpets, so to say. We weren't worried about that. Our chief financial officer at the time had come from another family business, not in the waste industry, but came from another family business that had gone through this process. Oh, Dean has been with us for about 20 years, so about 20 years ago. So he was familiar We had good good representation that knew what to expect. You know, I don't think there were any surprises at all. And you know, they besides the financials and the equipment and all of this, they want to make sure that we don't have any outstanding lawsuits that are hanging out there that could potentially come back, or you know, and labor issues that could be out there. I mean, it's just those minor things that we might not think of as we run our businesses on a day-to-day basis. But I don't think there were any surprises whatsoever. We put the package together, we submitted it, and off we go. There would be questions that come back, but luckily they didn't come back to me. They came back with our experts. So.
Yeah, but also you have to remember the character of the family. What's said along the way, the data doesn't contradict, right? And so basically we could move quickly through this. And from our side, if you keep your word, things move quickly as well. And so the process was fairly efficient.
And I think for Ben, a key question here is, after deciding to sell, what were the factors or the incentives that finally got you over the finish line? And perhaps most importantly, why did you decide to go with Waste Connections?
Well, we never got over the finish line until midnight on the night that we were supposed to get over the finish line. One thing you got to realize in a family business and a family situation, there's a lot of emotion that goes into making a decision of this magnitude. And so there was a lot of internal struggles more than there were external struggles to make this happen. But I think, you know, I don't know if there were any major incentives. One of the things that we requested from the very beginning, as we wanted to keep the name, which they were willing to do and a smart thing to do because of the brand. We wanted to make sure that our employees would continue to be employed at the level that they were employed at when they worked for E.L. Harvey & Sons. And I don't think there were anything else outstanding. I did want to negotiate when Worthing put a proposal together to keep me on and my limited capacity at minimum wage. I did ask him if I could have my direct report could be somebody different than my son, who's been directly reporting to me, and now it was going the other way. I did want to negotiate that, but he wouldn't negotiate that. We did have a lot of fun. And why did we decide to go with Waste Connections? As I said earlier, we didn't go into an auction phase, or we didn't want to go out and broadcast this all over. We wanted to keep this very close to the vest, which we did as much as we could. We went, I think one of the reasons, again, the timing was perfect when Connections came to visit with us. The ability to keep the Harvey name on the trucks, the ability to take care of our employees. There was something else I was just thinking of and I just lost it. But, you know, it's and the ability not to have to divide up. We had three divisions in Massachusetts when Connections came in, and you know, knowing that we would not be in a situation where we would be in any violation of mingling these, because Connections did not have a presence at the time or a very small presence down in southeastern Massachusetts, there wouldn't be any cutting apart of our company, which was extremely important to us too. So it stayed as a whole, and I think that was a, you know, and not to take anything away from the other suitors that could have been out there, we didn't get that far down the aisle with them to the marriage, but they might have done the same thing. It's just we felt very comfortable with the team that we were dealing with at Connections and what they were going to do for us, our family, and our employees.
Just and for the record, for the audience, this is not a. We didn't pay to have this event today. Actually, Ben and I were both approached saying, would you sit up here and tell your story? Just to make sure folks know this is not a Waste Connections advertisement.
No, and you made me do the questions, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were wondering when they asked us to do this, which one of us volunteered. We both looked at each other and said, did you agree to do this? And neither one of us agreed to do this. It was put on the program. We had to follow through.
Moving along. Now, for you, Worthing, in approaching a long-established family-run business such as Harvey, what are the special considerations or sensitivities or maybe other factors you consider when convincing them to sell?
Look, we obviously can't make the final decision. It's for the family. Look, whether it's multi-generational or not, it's just telling a story about who we are, what we believe in, what our values are, our culture, how we take care of our people. Obviously, we need to be competitive on valuation as well. And I'm sure how we run the business, how we keep it a local business and empower the local team to stay entrepreneurial. We just say who we are. I mean, it's up for the family to decide whether or not that fits with their priorities.
Ben largely covered this, but do you feel you did something special beyond that to get him over the finish line? Or that was the story, as you just said?
You'd have to ask Ben that question.
I don't know. I don't think there was anything special. I think it just evolved. And it evolved in a very non-controversial way that we went through this process. There was no getting halfway down the aisle and saying, I don't want to do this anymore. Externally, there was internally, but not externally.
And Ben, you've touched on this a little bit, but I think more in terms of the employees and not splitting up the business itself. But was it also important to you that the family stayed involved in the management after the sale?
I don't know if it was important because there were family members that had decided that this isn't what they wanted to continue to do. They didn't want to go work for a national company. Those of us that wanted to continue on and be a part of this wonderful industry that we all are a part of, we had the opportunity to do that. Those that decided that they didn't want to move on with the company had the opportunity to move on and do that. I don't know if that was important or not. I don't know. We were fortunate that we had that leeway to do that. And I think if I remember, one of the questions in here was, what about the employees? I think it was important for our employees to see some of the family still involved in the day-to-day operations, to see us come in. Even though I have no authority and I can't make any decision, they like to see my car parked out there and know I'm still around once in a while, looking out the window and keeping an eye on them. And even if it's not my deal at the end of the day, they can still come into my office and tell me what's bothering them. And I think that was very important to the majority of our team, our employees. But as far as the family's concerned, I think everybody had their different opinion of what they wanted to go off and do. And I don't know if it was with the connections people or with somebody earlier that they asked, what role would I like to play? What role would my son BJ, my cousin Doug, my cousin Steve, what role would you play moving forward? And I don't think there's a place for it as a company acquires another company. I don't think there's a place for the whole management team to come. One of the synergies of purchasing, I mean, we've done a bunch of small acquisitions, but one of the synergies is to consolidate that overhead cost to make your numbers work at the end of the day. So, did we still need to have 15 Harveys on the payroll after they took over? I don't think we did. But that was their choice too.
Well, I was going to say it was critical that part of the family wanted to stick around, right? I mean, look, we don't have the knowledge of Massachusetts and the New England marketplace, Ben, like you have. BJ's been instrumental in helping oversee the business when the family owned it, and it was critical for us to want to keep BJ and others because we don't have a long line of folks that have run and succeeded in Massachusetts that we can plug and play in this. And it was critical for the growth strategy going forward. We've now done 6 or 7 transactions since buying Harvey in that marketplace. And the family's been critical, each and every one.
And now, turning to both of you, first of all, Ben, now from all accounts, acquisition multiples have been certainly trending up over the past few years, and maybe particularly in 2021. So, Ben, what were you seeing as a seller, and were elevated industry valuations really the tipping point for you in terms of a sale?
No, I should have held out for another 6 months. I think that...
A long as you didn't go into 22, because look what's happened in the market now.
I know. I think if you are looking to sell a company, sell your company, to sell your life, in this case, oh, I got a little emotional right there. Excuse me. If you're looking to do that, you want the purchaser to place the same value on your life's work that you place on it. And regardless of the multiples, regardless of where we are in the marketplace, regardless of any of that, it has to be the value that you feel that you've put into it your entire life. And they need to feel the same way. And, you know, at the end of the day, I have no idea what the valuation ended up being. I know what they offered us for a price. I know what we accepted as a price for the buyout, and we went from there. And you always could have gone back and said, hey, we should have got more. Well, we could have got less, or we could have, maybe we should have talked to somebody else. But at the end of the day, we felt that we did the best deal, as I said earlier on, for our family, our employees, our community, and our customers. And that's what we were looking for. You know, we as Worthing said, we've expanded drastically or unbelievably in the 6 to 9 months that we've been a part of the family. Those resources we as E.L. Harvey & Sons might not have been able to do. We needed the financial resources to continue to grow our company. We needed the human resources resources that a big company like Waste Connections could bring to the table. And not that other companies couldn't, but this was the one that fit into what we looked for our future and where we wanted to grow our company. This was the partner that we thought could get us to that point. And we proved that in 8 months.
And I don't think the fact that it was 2021 influenced the valuation, to be honest with you. Look, legacy, high-quality companies, the valuations for us really haven't changed over time. Our inputs have always been looking at long-term cost of capital, not some momentary Fed-induced, you know, capital, cheap capital environment. And so, as Ben said, he and the family know what was attractive for them. Our view hasn't changed through the cycles for quality businesses. And, you know, we met the expectations.
I'm just thinking through a couple of other things. There are certainly some tax situations that we were looking at that were coming out that could have changed and made a very big difference in capital gains tax, in estate tax, and lowering the amount that you could put into gift tax and stuff like that. So there were certainly tax consequences that we looked at in 2021 that actually haven't proved out, but we didn't know whether they would or not. So that was another reason we looked strongly at doing this at the time we did it.
And Worthing, maybe if you can touch on it a little bit, you said it wasn't necessarily 21 valuations, but can you talk a little bit more about what in general multiples are for the platform companies versus the tuck-ins, and perhaps a little bit on how they've changed?
Sure. I mean, and look, the variety of factors, as I think folks in the room know, what are the margins the company's running at? What are the CapEx reinvestment needs in the business? Do you own the real estate, and is the real estate part of the transaction or not? What's the tax structure of the transaction? Do we get, is the acquirer getting its basis? Is it a stock deal? Is it an asset deal? So there are a variety of metrics that go into that analysis. And again, for high quality, what I would call gold-plated companies, generally those multiples are north of 10 times. The multiple is just an output of A divided by B. We don't go into something thinking, what is the multiple? High cash generative businesses deserve high valuations. Full stop. And the inverse is true as well.
Just maybe a little color on tuck-ins, though, and not full platforms, and whether that's changed.
Look, sellers know what they're worth. and the expectations of what they're worth, it takes a long time to reset expectations. Look, without a doubt, smaller tuck-in acquisitions do go for lower multiples. Obviously, we get the benefit of tucking those in this case, into Harvey. And again, those returns can be quite attractive, cash on cash. But you've got to have the platform company that it takes to harvest that.
And you did touch on a little bit that certainly the last 3 to 4 months have been more difficult, and perhaps more specifically, how has the recent sharp rise in interest rates changed your valuation calculation, or even perhaps your M&A strategy overall?
Well, put simply, it hasn't changed anything. Because again, the companies we're looking at these days, again, they own the real estate. Real estate could be 25 to 30% of the valuation, some of these transactions, and that clearly supports, a foundational support for the multiples of the ultimate valuation. Obviously, the ability for companies to demonstrate overcoming this high inflationary environment versus going backwards 21 to 22, that's critical as well to hold the valuation. And not every company, stepped up to try to still grow their business through this inflationary environment. They're just looking to try to kind of run in place or keep their head above water and cover it. So that's a big influencer right now as well. The cost of debt we've always assumed 6% cost of debt in all of our models, even though debt's never cost us that. We've always taken a longer term view on those kind of capital inputs. So just because rates are rising, the risk of a recession, et cetera, as we all know, this is a great industry. This industry does very well in a recession, too. And so that doesn't inform our decision either.
Well, you have your own particular strategy, of course. But generically, would you say that because of interest rates in general, acquisition multiples may be coming down a little bit here in 22 off of 21?
Well, I think for certain buyers, it has to influence them. Right, because some of the buyers that are, again, going in fully levered, obviously the cost of debt's gone up 300 to 400 basis points, and that's a serious input for those types of buyers, but not us.
Are you specifically private equity?
It could especially influence private equity.
How about the infrastructure funds? Do you think it changes how they look at the M&A picture at all?
Someone can really clearly define what infrastructure funds mean anymore. Because it seems like everything wants to be called an infrastructure fund, but they're no different.
And Werthig, I'm sticking with you right now, but so many factors have been cited behind the M&A wave in the solid waste industry over the past several years. Tax concerns, which Ben touched on briefly, generational issues, COVID fatigue, and of course, rising valuations. Now, are those still the primary drivers that you see as you look at what you've characterized as what's going to be another outsized year of acquisition activity in 22?
Well, sure. I mean, for us, I know many companies have had similar experiences. All of the above is, I would say, you use the word fatigue. I'd use the word exhaustion. I mean, it's tougher. The bigger these companies are getting, it's tougher and tougher to keep up because the world is changing dynamically, and this lack of labor, wage escalations, high inflation, it's tough. And not many folks, were responding quick enough to overcome it. And so they're behind the eight ball. And some folks are saying, look, I'm not ready to do that. So let me let you folks do it for us or with you. But taxes don't go down. taxes will always be there.
And turning to you, Ben, kind of along similar lines here, and most recently post-pandemic, again, to Worthing's point, labor shortages, supply chain constraints, getting the equipment, the high inflation, particularly now fuel costs, they've all been front and center. So from the private hauler perspective, ultimately, were these pressures becoming a bigger competitive disadvantage, in your opinion, for E.L. Harvey to the majors, such that these factors were a reason behind your decision to sell?
I don't think they were for our company, I don't think they were a competitive disadvantage. They were a challenge certainly a challenge. As I said earlier, the resources that partnering or going to, with Waste Connections was, is they gave us some of those resources to get over some of those challenges that we face. But, you know, we always try to run a good company. So we try to minimize the impacts of all of those things that you just said. Yeah, we struggle for drivers just like everybody else. We, you know, we face disposal issues in the Northeast, or in Massachusetts especially, that no other part of the country faces. We've fought with the recycling markets since China backed out back 5-6 years ago, and still hasn't gotten in. I mean, all of those issues are challenges that we face. We were fortunate enough that our fuel, we had gone out and purchased futures, and we kept rolling those futures forward. So that wasn't as big a challenge or as big as disadvantage. When these roll off, it will be, but right now we've got that pretty well under control. And it's just, you know, it's the day-to-day management of your business that keeps you abreast of those things. Challenges, yes. Competitive disadvantage, I would say no.
So again, for both of you, but first of all, Ben, I'm going to stick with you. Kind of similar question to the last, but it's also been cited, and again, relatively more recently, that the growing investment in technology in the business, not just in the trucks and the equipment, but also in the digitization, of customer service, has also become a more significant competitive disadvantage for the private haulers vis-a-vis the majors. And maybe particularly as some of these customer sustainability needs and requests grow. So first of all, Ben, were you seeing that in your business?
I will say the exact same thing I just said. we saw those as challenges, and we met those challenges. Worthing said this earlier on, we weren't building this business to say, okay, let's get to 2022 and we'll have a sale. We were building this business to continue to take care of our employees and our family and our community. So we are all the time investing in those technologies. Yeah, there's some technologies that might have been outside of our financial resources at that time to invest in, and you have to make that decision on, okay, where are you investing in that technology? We decided to invest heavily in Third Eye to put in all of our trucks. Our safety director back there, Jerry Shogren, he's been trying to get me to do that for how many years, Jerry? I don't know. Can't even tell you how many years he's wanted us to do that. So we put Third Eye in, and then we put our laptops, our tablets. I always get the tablets in there. This is all technology that we had put in place prior to Waste Connections coming on board, because it was what we needed to do to be competitive. We are in a very competitive market in the Northeast in Massachusetts. We've got all the majors up there playing in our sand pile. We've got a bunch of independents that play in our sand pile. And we have to keep abreast of these technological changes. But there is, again, as the challenge or the disadvantage is we had finite financial resources. And where do we invest those resources? We have to invest them in our fleet because we need to keep our fleet on the road. It was a challenge to when you take over a residential contract and you need 7 trucks and there's not 7 trucks in the United States to be had. That's a challenge. I wish I was Scott Doles right now renting trucks. He's the only one that's smiling here today.
Sold in 21.
If you're looking to get a truck, I suggest you go to the EREF auction tomorrow. They've got what? Two front loaders and a bunch of trucks. They are going to be the best sellers. I've already talked with people that say, I can't get a truck from my dealer, but I saw what I can buy on the floor. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I got off topic here a little bit. But we would continue to invest and to remain competitive in our marketplace.
When I use the terminology gold-plated, that's what you're describing. Right. I mean, it's making the investments necessary. Again, the tablet technology was best in class. Third Eye, bringing in cab cameras, Not every private company would embrace that. Oh, and their safety performance shows that. I mean, your safety commitment was second to none as well. So culturally, coming putting the two companies together was a hell of a lot easier based on the foundational investments that RV had already made.
And, well, that's a great ad, Worthing, but let me just conversely kind of turn it to you, not so much Harvey per se, but what I asked Ben, are you seeing that in terms of smaller companies increasingly looking to sell or look to sell to you because of these technology demands that we're seeing either on the customer side or the equipment side? Do you think that's part of the big M&A activity that we're seeing this year, last year?
No. It's not, look, you know, a $10 million collection company or a $20 million collection company isn't going to make the decision that, you know, my internet, my digital connectivity in the marketplace, you know, is not up to snuff with some, you know, multi-billion dollar company. Let me sell. That's not what's driving the sale.
Yeah, I think there are many other challenges that are driving them to the table to negotiate besides the technology. And again, go back to what we have in the Northeast, limited disposal. If we as a company didn't go out and secure disposal out of state and put in the proper equipment and technology to move that material out of state, and a lot of companies, small companies, don't have the resources to do that, and now you're at the disadvantage of a gate rate going into a transfer station. That's the challenge that a small $1 to $10 million hauling company faces. And then you start talking about, we talked about it a little bit, the exposure that your trucks have out there on the highway with distracted driving and all of that. Your insurance rates are going up. You know, the Third Eye gave us that opportunity to look at those. What did you call them, Jerry? The near misses or something like that, where maybe that's the technology that the small companies can't get to. And so they can't get the insurance that they need. There's other stimuli or other factors, I think, that cause that. Not so much, as Worthing said, who cares? I've been writing on a piece of paper and a pencil doing my book work for years. What? I don't need all of this technology. I know who I picked up this morning. I know my route.
Well, I'd like to open it up for questions, but before I do, is there anything else you gentlemen would either like to say to each other or to the audience about this process that I didn't cover?
Why don't we open up for questions first?
I'm still trying to get my direct report changed.
Any questions for folks? And I'll repeat them if there's no microphone out there. Microphone out there.
I would like to thank you all for a great, great discussion. It was just excellent. Ben, I'm from your neck of the woods. I'm here representing Northeastern University. And so we've seen all this change in the haulers in our area. And so I just really like the hearing the two sides of the acquisition. The third side is the customer side. And so when we go out to bid in the next year, all those little companies that we all, small to mid-sized companies that we've relied on, we've felt comfortable with, as you say, that gold-plated standard, the family that we want to bring in and serve us, we feel like we're losing them. So I'd just be interested in the perspective that you might each offer about how we can still get that level of personalized service.
First of all, good to see you here today. I've spent a lot of time at Northeastern University with Butch Mitchison and Jack Ballone. We started their recycling program, I don't even know how many thousands of years ago. I think I was just out of high school, but maybe I was a little bit older than that. So we do have a long tradition with Northeastern University. And I think, and Worthing could correct me on this, I think that one of the reasons we kept the brand of E.L. Harvey and Sons is to keep that gold standard, to provide that quality customer service. Does that mean that there won't be changes? No, there's bound to be changes. But, you know, what's made E.L. Harvey & Sons a success, we now want to transfer to Waste Connections to make them a success. And the customer's number one. Without customers, we don't need drivers, we don't need trucks, we don't need me. You know, that's at the end of the day, the customer is it. So we as a company want to provide that same level of service that we did as E.L. Harvey and Sons, as we do now with Harvey Connections. And I think that that's important. Yeah, it might limit your pool a little bit more as more and more of a, unfortunately, in our area right now, it's almost every week we're hearing about somebody that's not there anymore. JRM just is doing that deal. I think is happening May 15th. ABC Disposal down in New Bedford. Russell, I heard is thinking about doing something. So yeah, I mean it does limit your options. Yeah. But the main thing is to get that competitive bid and to make sure that service is there, to pick that service provider that's going to continue to provide that service.
And provide it in such a way that they're honoring their commitment. Not show up once a month and skip the next 3 weeks and still get paid for a full month, because I see a lot of that happening out there now. Look, from our standpoint, our view in this industry is you keep it local. You know, we're here to support the local management team and how the business is run. We're not here to tell the local management team how to run a business, because we shouldn't think we know more about how to do it at corporate. So in our model, we get decisions made locally, customer support is local. We want to keep that same entrepreneurial spirit, that same family feel, and again, keep that local, because companies that destroy that really are losing that connection between family and customer.
Hi there. Michael Racketer. I'm a partner with Delos Capital. So we're a lower middle market private equity fund, typically kind of the first institutional capital for family-owned businesses looking to grow their operations. First of all, congratulations on a highly successful partnership and merger. Really great to hear your insights. I was wondering, Worthing, from your perspective as a buyer, if there's a valuation gap between the buyer and the seller, so what are some of the tools that you like to use to kind of bridge that gap? And then Ben, from your perspective as a seller, what are some of the features that you might value if there's a bit of a gap there? Thank you.
Well, some gaps are insurmountable, and you know we agree to separate and reengage or let someone else meet that expectation, right? So it's not always possible, but obviously in working with sellers, look, we've got to tell the story about why the gap exists and be honest and transparent about it, and also walk through what we need to see to close that gap. And in some cases, it's laying out a strategic plan for the family. It's monitoring that over time. And maybe, 9 months or 18 months later, there's a chance to have closed that gap. There are other creative ways to address it as well. But again, sometimes it's okay not to get the deal done. There's no need to stretch and overpay, because our view has always been you have one chance to spend the money. So let's just make sure it works for both parties.
Yeah, and I would echo that. The if the gap can't be bridged, no is the answer. Yeah. And we'll take another run at it 10 years down the road or whatever. But if from our standpoint, the gap can't be breached, we still own our company. We still do what we do every day. We'll take it to the next level. There's nothing wrong with no sometimes at the end of the day. So yeah, and not being a professional, I don't know what all of those gaps fillers are. So I don't know so I can't say, oh yeah, we would look at it this way or we would look at it that way. Probably if we had that big a gap from our standpoint, from the seller's standpoint, it would be, nope, come back again some other time.
Yeah, I think you've seen some companies be willing just to close any gap because the cost of capital was so cheap these past few years. And again, it's easy to write checks, it's easy to spend money. But driving value creation over the long term is what we ought to be doing this for, not just doing deals for deal's sake. And so, again, I'll say it again, it makes sense to say no and disengage.
Good afternoon. Anthony Blosansky with AJ Blosansky Incorporated. Question for Worthing. How do you think decentralization helped you to help your customers during COVID?
Well, first off, I think Ben even said there are always challenges, and no one ever said this was supposed to be easy, right? Look, from our standpoint, how did we address COVID? It's obviously supporting our employees and their families, not only health, but also welfare, right? Because if we're going to support the customers and get to honor our commitments, we've got to have the employees that are willing to do it. And so from our standpoint, we did that. We supported our frontline employees with over $50 million of supplemental pay, of COVID, PTO for COVID-related absences, you know, relief fund request. Because a lot of times it wasn't the employee that was suffering a consequence from COVID. It was the spouse that may have lost hours or may have lost their job. And so for us, it was being there for the entire family. Again, we can't service the customer unless we're serving our frontline. And so, you know, in Waste Connections, we have an inverted pyramid where I'm at the bottom, right? Every day I've got to come in and support 21,000 employees. And again, not only at work, but also in their family life. But also we made sure we stepped up on the community support too, right? Because despite the impacts that you saw in the economy, we upped our game and increased our outflow by 2x when it came to supporting community support. Because a lot of times those charities were losing contributions, obviously. Think back to 2020. So when they most needed the money, we wanted to be there.
Yeah, and I don't have any comparison because we did the deal with Waste Connections. We didn't do it with the Republic. We didn't do it with Waste. So I don't know. I can't say anything about how they would have done things, or if they would have done things differently than what we have with Connections. But I will tell you that Connections has stood up and taken care of all of the employees at E.L. Harvey and Sons the way we expected them to. I'm just repeating what Worthing said, but I'm telling you from my experience, when they continued to invest in the community through donations, if we as a company were doing donations to the Little League or the Boy Scouts or whatever that is, to our in-state recycling association, they stepped up and continued to fund those things. We finally had a Christmas party that happened in February that Connections wanted us to do. We have not done that for our employees in a long time. It was just too big of a task for us to get 300 people together, but they knew how to do it, and so we were able to celebrate with our employees. I don't know, I guess it was a post-holiday party. Oh, I'm sorry. It was in April. We never even got it done in February. We had 3 dates that we had to keep kicking it down the road because of COVID. But from where I'm sitting, what they said they would do for our people and our community, they have done.
Hi, I'm David Markey from Oliver Wyman. So Worthing, yesterday you spoke a little bit about the move towards dynamic route optimization. I was interested to hear your thought in terms of how, with respect to technology, the centralization versus decentralization play comes in.
You know, our CIO is sitting right back there, so you guys ought to talk afterwards. But look, from our standpoint, when we do a transaction, the first month, the financials close on the same GL, right? And so you've got to have commonality from a technology standpoint, everybody on one system on the financial side. Obviously, the customer data, that's a much more difficult data set to transfer over. And so as we schedule all those cutovers, and that takes a while. You get that wrong, and you've done your CSRs, you've done dispatch, you've done your customer, you've done a lot of folks a disfavor by getting that wrong, right? But clearly, from a central standpoint, again, IT, we have a lot of folks that focus on applications and development, and so we're able to, you know, take advantage of that leverage, right, in putting these new systems in place, trying to, again, stand up these new systems, because these are just ideas we have, and Eric back there, you can tell he's already lost his hair trying to do some of them, and digitization, employee connectivity, customer connectivity, et cetera, there's a lot of things that we can do at our level to help support, you know, our folks locally, because it's a tough job. And in this day and age, quality of life, meaning work-life balance, is even more important. So anything we can do to take pressures off the inbounds to help the CSRs, not to cut CSRs, but to make their day-to-day more enjoyable, is critical for us, right? Look, we're learning a lot on tablet technology from what Harvey's done, because it works both ways. It's not just about what we bring. It's what others have as well.
Any more questions? I would also just mention that it doesn't all have to be just about the art of the deal, but these two gentlemen also have their boots on the ground every day. And so if you have questions in terms of what they're seeing in the economy or anything else, I'd just mention that if anyone's interested in any other more general questions. Yeah.